cosa mi ne desca.
Volunteerism workshop. GRC 7.
I'm Sonia Heaven. I live here in Caledon Center. I'm a farmer and a shepherd, and I have a show on our local station.
I'm Eddie Arthur. I'm from PRFR in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I'm going to be the volunteer guy. I don't have any show yet because we don't have any station yet. But I do know I'll have one.
My name's Ted Coe. I work at KCSB-FM in Santa Barbara, California, and I'm the pledge drive coordinator and administrative staff at KCSB.
Hi, I'm Catherine Rousseau. I'm with WDIF. This is my first such conference, and I'm just a basic volunteer here learning a lot of things for the first time.
I'm Patty Heffley, and I'm a member of Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica, New York, and I'm a volunteer.
My name is Hans. I was a volunteer for SAME and work with WBI.
I'm Doris Martin. I'm from WMC in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I'm a volunteer.
Kathy Melio. I'm a volunteer at WERU-FM. I have a unique position of having been general manager there, so better to be a volunteer.
Was it 10 years of being general manager?
I was general manager for 5 and news director for 7.
Okay. Where are you located?
In Maine.
And Kathy is also one of the two co-founders of Grassroots Radio Conference. I'm Brian Sherman. I'm on the board of directors of WRFG Radio Free Georgia in Atlanta. The board has just fired our volunteer coordinator. I was the only person who voted against firing her because I have a hard time firing people. Volunteer coordinator, we've had several people in that position, both paid and unpaid, and it's never really been that successful. I think it's the hardest position we've had to find somebody really good for. So I'd love to hear those of you who do it or have somebody good at your station talk about it.
I have a program on KMED in Barbara, California. I did a stint on the board in tumultuous times there.
My name is Fair. I'm also from KMUD in Northern California. I did a very brief stint in KMUD in 1997 as a volunteer coordinator. That was the beginning of tumultuous times, I'd say. They're hopefully beginning to calm down a little bit.
Hi, I'm Char McBee. I live in Sullivan County, South Ballsburg, New York. And I actually started volunteering in 1970 at KPFK in Los Angeles, and I loved it as a volunteer. And then I went on, I got a job at CBS Radio, and I did it for 8 years, and I liked being a volunteer better. So I quit, and I volunteered all over the world, and I've written a book called To Lead It to Serve, How to Attract Volunteers and Keep Them. And there, wow. I have a bunch of them. I'm going to put out their gift for anyone that wants one.
Whoa.
And I write and speak about how to attract volunteers. So I came here to get ideas from all of you, if you don't mind.
Yes. Where are you from now?
I live near here.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You work in
I'm Christy Lloyd. I'm from Tucson, Arizona, KXCIs, and I'm a volunteer programmer.
Holger and anybody else on the board right now. When we started the station, there was a volunteer coordinator on the sheet. And I don't think we ever had a person that calls themselves, but we've been moderately coordinated. I don't know if I'm not sure as I felt that. But I also helped to oversee the First Light DJs. I've been doing First Light 5 to 9 in the morning forever. And interesting. We now have 3 paid staff, which we didn't have for so many years. And the volunteer coordinating duties, I think, are passed around between them. But I'm curious to see how other people have done it.
I'm Brian Lane. I'm a teacher at the local community college. We are just starting up 2 radio stations.
Okay.
I've been the advisor for whatever town I've lived in, the college radio station there, for 15 years. I've also been in commercial radio for 21 years. But any way that I can get to, any ideas I can get to motivate my kids, you know, to, because college radio stations are all about volunteering. And that's why I'm here.
And where did you say you're from?
Sullivan County. I live in Calicoon, actually, which is a different town than Calicoon Center.
Right around here.
Right. And I teach at the community college about 20 minutes from here. Right.
I'm Christy Rupp. I'm a local resident here in the summer and a volunteer at BAI when I'm in town.
Okay. Now it's up to the presenters, Father. Well, you are.
I am a volunteer coordinator.
Why don't you talk a little bit and then we'll glance it around.
My idea about coordinating volunteers is that I look at it as my job. I was a volunteer at WMF before I came on staff. And to me, being a volunteer is the most important thing a person can do. You get so much. I got so much out of the station. It was just so refreshing for me to come in the door and to be have the privilege to come in and do some of the things I did and be allowed to do them. And that's one thing I think that we continue to do at our station, is to allow people to do what they want to do. I mean, they have great ideas, and you have to listen to them and allow them to carry those ideas out, because they have so much energy, and they want to help, and we want to make sure they want to stay with us and keep and grow with us too. So the idea is to allow them to express themselves, grow, do what they want to do, and give them the room to do that. Allow them to expand and bring people in. Our volunteers are super, and I love them all. They're always coming up, oh, I've got this great idea, I've got this great idea. It says, oh, good. And it really helps the station to grow. And we have 250 regular volunteers, including on-air people, that help us with everything we do. Some of the things they've done, we do a show every year called Tropical Heat Wave. This last May we had, and Joanne's been to that show one year. Last year we had 36, this last May we had 36 bands on 6 different stages. We brought Michelle Shock, Sonny Landreth, Tim O'Brien, a couple of world groups, some local bands. We always include local bands in the mix. We had 200 volunteers help us with that show. They run it, set it up, do decorations, take tickets, work the stages, move equipment, everything you could think of, got involved. That was started by 3 volunteers 21 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just saying, we need this. And it continues to grow. We do things on a regular basis. We're unique, I guess, in some community radio stations that we do a lot of events. And we allow volunteers to get involved and tell us, hey, who would you like to come play? And they go out, they go to like South by Southwest and say, bring these people in. And we get those people in. And it's, you know, and we allow them to expand and express themselves. And that's very key. I think that that's why we keep so many of our volunteers. Allowing them to just be who they are and be a part of what we are. We have 4 volunteer reps on our board of directors. We have one community rep that's selected by the volunteers. Our volunteer committee is very proactive. We have 2 volunteer committee members, and also the board volunteers are on our volunteer committee, and they're very proactive in what happens. They continue to look at policy that affects volunteers and stand up for what volunteers do. If there's a problem, they know who to go to. They go to the volunteer. They come to me, or they go to the volunteer, one of the volunteer reps, or one of the volunteer committee members, and say, "Here's what we have. We have a problem," and we work it out. And we listen, listening what they have to say. And that's very important, listening and feedback and allowing them to do the things they want to do.
Yeah. Earlier this morning, you and Vicki were talking about rights and responsibilities that are written out.
Yeah, we have a very clear programmer's agreement that's written out with grievance procedures and rights, what they can and cannot do, what they're allowed to do. And it's very clear, and it's a very thoughtful document. It took us a long time to do this. We took time. It went to the staff, back to the volunteer committee, to the staff, back to the volunteer committee. It took almost 3 years to get the thing right, and it's really a good working document. Problems are handled on a case-by-case basis. We don't have any set clear, oh, you do this, you're gone. It doesn't work that way. They have a grievance procedure that's very thorough, very proactive, and they have a follow, a way to go that allows them a way to resolve the problem. And usually those problems, they're very infrequent, that they do get resolved to a fair satisfaction to everybody.
Yeah, I did. I do believe that our general manager is trying to draft something like that at this time. Unfortunately, he is the kind of person, and I mean, he's not a bad man. He just is very business oriented, and so his obsession is with potential tort risk to the station. Mm-hmm. So he's running it by lawyers.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you did that, because he's obsessed with the legalities of it as opposed to, you know.
We don't look at that. I think we have lawyers on our board, and I don't know if I can't remember if the document was run by any of our board
members. It's always wise to run something like that
by
a lawyer.
It is.
I agree, but unfortunately, you know, one of the reasons I'm here is to try and come up with the thing to say that can maybe, you know, push that animal in a different direction. And so, I'm actually hoping for feedback as to something I can say that he can hold on to and be comfortable with, and find a middle ground between the two fields that we.
Yeah. If the object of an agreement like that is so that you're coming from a steady platform moving forward rather than trying to cover your ass legally. We've never had to use it in that regard, but it is a place where everybody agrees upon a starting off point, and this is what you're going to do. This is what is expected of you, and I think that if you use it as that kind of tool, it's the best.
Mm-hmm. I happen to have read something your general manager wrote in regards to that, and it seems so fear oriented.
Yeah.
And all I want to say about WMNF, and I'll say about KGNU as well, they have station managers who are just the opposite of fear oriented. Mm-hmm. They're so open and encouraging, and it shows in how successful and great their stations are. And Vicky and Marty, they just have this approach that's nurturing. And there are some stations where the station manager is so afraid that they're going to lose something that they lose more than they would if they would be open and foster this great, rolling, wonderful collaboration.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like for people, if anyone's had experience of losing volunteers because of how they were treated and then having to win them back, other ones had to deal with that at their station.
That's a constant struggle for us sometimes because there's personalities involved. Some people don't like certain people, and you say, "I don't want to work with that person" or something like that. So I have that. That's one of the many things that I'm very good at, and expressing my feelings to how important they are. We have a young lady who does a very extremely good job at our concerts. She, when the artist comes in, she will take all the person's CDs and she will sell them for the artist and reconcile everything. She sets up hospitality for all of our artists, and she does an absolutely wonderful job. She has a unique personality that she's very responsible, and she wants to make sure everything is done right, and nobody can tell her that she's going to do it wrong. And I love her to death. She's just a wonderful, we couldn't do the things we do without her, but there are some people who do not like to work with her. And she's got to the point now where she's been put off by people. But I call her up and I say, "Susan, we need you." Mm-hmm. I says, "I want you to, I know you have a lot of problems with some of the people we have, but you're important to us." Mm-hmm. And you reiterate it. I'm a very touchy-feely person. And when volunteers come in, they get hugs. I love hugs. Hugs is good. And all of these people are my family. And that's how we look at things. People come in and they're my brothers and sisters. And that when they come in, when a volunteer comes in, they're my main purpose for being there at that time. That's the important thing. You let them know that you care, they're important. Let them know that what they do is important. And thank them profusely. Thank them over and over and over again. And reinforce that.
I'll talk for a few minutes about an experience we had at KMA this year. Just before the fall fundraiser, we have a management team of three people, and the operations manager is in charge of coordinating volunteers for the fundraiser. And she sent out a letter to about 30 volunteers that hadn't volunteered in previous fundraisers. Basically, a very harsh letter threatening.
Out of 120.
Out of 120 people. It's a very harsh letter saying, you know, I've noticed you didn't volunteer, and you better volunteer at the next fundraiser or there'll be consequences. Now, we have a programmer's agreement. We have a programmer's agreement that says, you know, I understand fundraising is way, way important. And I'll do the very best that I can to do a three-hour shift during the fundraiser. You know, I know this is what keeps the station on the air. So she had a new board, a lot of new people on the board, and she went to the board after the fundraiser. She goes, okay, well, I sent out this letter, and all but 10 people volunteered in the last fundraiser, and I've decided to suspend the people that didn't... volunteer. And she presented them with documentation that an old programmer's agreement that basically said, you know, I will do this. And we also had a form that people applying for shows, an old form. The top of the form, it said, I will do 2 hours of work per month for the station if I get a show. That was at the top. And she presented them with both these documentations, and they went, well, you know, looks like, we support you in suspending these people, basically. She suspended them. All hell broke loose. Because, first of all, there was no policy to support her. The documentation was false. But also, many of us thought that forcing people to volunteer was kind of moronic. And not, you know, I mean, it's an oxymoron. So it led to several months of... you know, intense conflict with, you know, many people showing up at the next board meeting, reading the riot act to the board. Well, the board at that meeting voted to reinstate everyone that had been suspended, suspended the suspension on the condition that the people who didn't volunteer would volunteer during the next fundraiser. Well, that wasn't okay with those people either, because it, you know, they said, well, you know, you're still trying to punish, you know, this isn't okay. There still is, they go, well, it is okay because you don't know it, but we're going to pass a policy in the next couple of months that will say that all volunteers have to volunteer at the fundraiser. So this is, you know, so the next board meeting, the personnel committee had met with the people who'd been suspended, and they came and they said, you know, we met and we looked over the documentation, and one of the people was an attorney on the personnel committee, and he said, you know, if they take this to court, this isn't going to hold up. You know, there is no policy in place, and this other document that says I'll do 2 hours per month is not the legally binding document. It's the programmer's agreement that's the legally binding document. So the board went, oh, so it's not legal. Oh, okay, well, in that case, we'll completely turn everything around. The next board meeting, they were planning on passing the programmer's agreement that would make it mandatory. And when it came down to the vote, it lost because two of the board members who were firm on it changed their vote and things had been lobbied. And the upshot of that was that our operations manager resigned the next day, and now we've got a new one in place who had been sitting on that board and seems at this point, the honeymoon is still on, but you know, seems very, very, very people oriented and like you'll be way good in this position, you know, but we'll see how it all plays out. But I know that it is a real problem getting people to volunteer at some stations, and it does lead. The operations manager that wanted to make it mandatory, she's not a bad person, she was desperate. And she didn't know any other way to do it, you know. And, you know, people laugh, but, you know, I mean, I think when you're sitting in that position and you're trying to figure out how do you get what you need so you don't have to spend, you know, 40 hours a day trying to pull it all together. So, yes.
In fairness, she did at one point say, you know, Paul's never volunteered, but you know, when I called him and asked him to do something, he said yes. And we were kind of like, call him up and ask him to do
it. Yeah, or find someone, or find the right person. See, that's the other thing. A lot of times, you know, you'll delegate, because you're so busy, you'll delegate that job to somebody. You got to be way careful who you're delegating to have call people to ask them to do it also. Some people have a better style of asking than others.
I wanted to ask Jean about Susan, was it, that does your events? If Susan showed up with her own crew, so much the easier for you, right?
Yeah, and she does.
Yeah, people that work well with her, that she
and she does, and some people work well with her. It's like that in most cases. We have given great responsibility to the volunteers to do things. A lot of times when we can't, like we have a part-time special events coordinator, and of course special events are very important for us because a lot of our income comes from that. So she's over the last year she's had a lot of sickness in her family. Her father's had some problems. She's had to go home and things like that. So we've had volunteers responsible for the money at the door, reconciling all the ticket sales at the end of the night, making sure the artists were paid, making sure the sound was there and everything was on schedule. So, I mean, that's a big thing that makes people want to volunteer, giving them more responsibility, allowing them to do those things. That's what made me want to volunteer, because some of the things I did, they says, okay, you know, first thing I did when I walked in the door was volunteer shred paper.
What did you shred?
Well, M&F is famous for keeping everything.
Oh, okay.
So, and our accountant is really, really, you know, he still wears the banker's lamp and wears the garters on his sleeve, I think, and still uses a pencil. But we have a lot of old records that had to be shredded and stuff like that. But and then as time went on, this is okay. You're going to be responsible for sending out all our thank you gifts. We sent out tons of thank you gifts. I was responsible for making sure all those thank you gifts got processed, everything got done. I was responsible for matching up checks, pledges, right, when they came in. I got so involved with the station, my wife never saw me. So she came down and volunteered. And to see me.
That's just going to happen with Dave. He's going to end up with his wife and two kids.
But the thing is she got involved. We had a big, huge event over in St. Pete, which is right across the bay from us, where we had brought in a lot of Texas bands. And she was the volunteer coordinator for that event. And she loved it. She's great. She got to meet all these great people. And then she was the... Then I got to volunteer coordinate the Heatwave 1 year. But we do that with our volunteers. We allow them, give them a lot of responsibility, and let them follow through. Our CD, we put out two CDs. Mm-hmm. That's all a big volunteer effort.
You've done that twice?
We do it twice. We continue to do that. We record all of our shows. We have volunteers go out there with a DAT machine. They plug it up to the board, set the levels, make sure it's done, take it back home, copy it to CD, bring it to the committee. They listen to it, says, yeah, this is good. We're going to include this on the CD. We're not going to include this. They write the record companies. They write the artists, get permission to use all the stuff. They do all this stuff. We put on a big CD and record sale at the end of the year where people donate stuff. That's all volunteer driven.
Sure.
People do that. They go down, they make the arrangements for the location. They set up the tables. They get they coordinate all the volunteers there. They get somebody to look at the records to see what they're priced at. You know, here we got a couple of volunteers that are record collectors and go to a lot of shows. It's the whole thing. Allow them to do, and it's great. It relieves a lot of, for us, we're in the middle of a capital campaign,
right,
trying to build a new building. For us, it's a great relief. So I can say, oh, Carol, what you got going? Oh, I got this and this and this. It's all ready to go. We're all set. I don't have to worry about it.
And you don't feel threatened by
No, and these people are my friends.
Right.
And that's the way I look at it. They're my friends, and we're all that big, happy family.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to... I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
How long did it take to build that kind of relationship with the station?
I think the relationship was always there. Mm-hmm. The person that was volunteer coordinator for where I was is now our special events coordinator. She always had a good rapport with volunteers. Our program director has a good rapport with all the volunteers. We work very closely with everybody. Of course, Vicky and all the other people there are just really close, and we're always getting calls and stuff and say, you know, just how you doing. I always call volunteers and say, hey, if I ain't seen you in a while. Or they come in and I say, I haven't seen you a while. Where you been?
Okay, so this is all in Tampa, which is a big, you have big pool to draw from.
It is. And the retention, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've got a question to ask everybody, because we all have something in place, I would imagine, where, you know, the privilege of being on air is you're asked to support the radio station with off-air volunteerism. Is that, am I getting nods over?
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the format, right? So my question is, does anyone have like 100% compliance? And if they do, well, let's talk about that, because that's the problem, you see. As somebody in development, you know, my job is not, does not involve on-air stuff. So I am always looking for people to help fulfill their, quote, commitment. And ours is very minimal. You know, for every hour on air, so you have a three-hour show, you're supposed to give like a half an hour back to the station somewhere. Well, we've got 200-plus volunteers, been on the air for 25 years. There's people that have been on the air for the full 25 years, and some of them I've never even met. So, I mean, not a lot of them, but there's that. But there's certainly some that have, in the last 15 years, have not done anything. So as development director, where I need people to be working on events like Gene's talking about, or behind the scenes outreach, things like that, or anything, because I it's a matter of principle for me. If somebody's been on the air for 15 years, you know, they really just do one thing. And now I'm down to this. Just do one thing per year. One thing.
Are you like volunteer coordinator?
I'm not, but we don't have a true volunteer coordinator. We have someone who has that title, but she's more of a human resources if there's a problem.
Right.
But otherwise, we have the news director who works very strongly with all the news volunteers. We have the music director that works very strongly with all the volunteers. And then you have the ship jobs, shall I say, of the non-glamorous off-air things that I need help with. And so my reputation now at the radio station is, oh, here comes Joanne. She's going to ask me to do something. And you know, I mean, I try to say it as nicely as I possibly can and with love in my heart, but this is how I'm viewed now. And it's getting old, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
So I need help.
What size station are you at?
We're a big city. Membership or
no,
wattage?
Just a city or
Boulder is a big town,
big city.
So we have that similar situation, which, you know, came to a head with this kind of mandatory volunteering problem. And I just, as a lifelong volunteer, I thought, well, don't we have like an untapped resource in off-air volunteers? There's a number of people in our community who want to work for KMOD. I have no interest in being on air.
When, you know, during the so you're saying let it go, don't bother.
That's what I'm saying.
I say
people
what are
people
the solutions
do shows,
that people
put
have
a lot
to
of effort and research into their shows, and they feel like that is volunteering.
Absolutely.
And it's not being acknowledged.
Right.
Okay, you can observe. I'll say something, then you can make your own. Do you, on your pledge forms, do you have a place where you, when people give, where you can ask, would you like to do more for the station than just see? I would add that. That would get, you know, and get, you know, their phone number and all that stuff. And then
we have no shortage of volunteers. That's not the crux. We have, you know, we operate very smoothly. My issue is a matter of principle, because we have that in writing, right?
Yeah.
Because the people on air are
change
supposed to be giving something back off air. And I could let it go, and I have let it go, because that is the philosophy of our management.
Right.
Thing, and it works very well.
Right.
And so that's why I ask. Certainly the enforcement angle is not the way to go, but is there something in place that somebody has where every, you know, and I said what I would do is put a big board up, and every volunteer's name is there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've done one thing for the radio station, you put a star. No, in a year.
In a year.
You put a star next to your name. And the object is everybody has a star next to their name. I don't care what you do.
And then you have some peer
if you're shredding
pressure,
paper, or you're doing a special thing. If you just everybody 100% compliance,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, that's pie in the sky, I know. But for me, it would be a way to get it off my chest with people that I feel that haven't been pulling their weight off air, you know, would do something.
Yeah.
So, but I want to know, does anybody else, you know, do you, is it an issue for anybody else, or is it just me, or...
I want to know, why is volunteering, I mean, having a show not considered, that's a huge commitment. Why is that not, that's volunteering.
Because if everybody did the on-airs, the guts of the radio station behind the scenes wouldn't roll.
But you said you had no shortage.
That's true.
Of volunteers. Right.
And it's a matter of principle.
It's a principle. I say, do yoga and let it go. Your observation.
Well, it was really, actually, I was going to say, when you're doing an on-air show, you put a lot of hours behind the scenes and all of that. But my observation really was going to be, you know that little story about how the sun and the wind are trying to get the coat off the guy? Well, I thought he was describing the sun coming out, shining, and so the coat comes off. You were describing it, Kema, the wind, so they just hold tighter.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it just goes back to that. But I know Joanne is great with volunteers, so... There, well, I'm confused about
maybe it's
why
a,
they're not coming
maybe
out.
Maybe it's
an
ineffectual
stuff.
Thing that we're all adhering to. That's something that was started at the inception of community radio about
they really
the
needed it.
About the commitment exactly. Right. And now maybe you don't. And maybe so we should rework it.
I think you should redo your writing. I think you should make the reality match what's in writing. And I think that's way important to do because you know as long as you guys are in place, you know how it goes. But, you know, if you have a changeover, which is way likely to happen at KTNU fairly soon, it seems like, and you get another manager in there that doesn't understand the philosophy, and they're just going by the writing, then...
That's what's going to happen.
I think it's going to be a way out of a different story. So I think it's way important that the things that are written down match what's happening in reality. And I also think... shredding. Yeah, that's it. Shredding. I was thinking, you know, we like, you know, our manager coming in with old documentation, and I think it was an honest mistake. She pulled out a programmer's agreement that was totally unrelated to the present one. You know, I think it's important to get rid of, you know, or put them in another someplace else if you're not going to shred them, so people don't get confused about what is the present policy of the station.
We've never had that portion of the agreement. I think we send our volunteers out to conferences and they come back and we say, now all the other stations, they have a half hour for every... We have a lot of drive time on the Cape, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people are having to drive to get there. I guess one illustration, Steve Milkowitz picked up a show early on after we decided rock and roll was the same community radio because he wanted thought there was a place for it. He's been doing a show for 20 years. And he's also someone's 9 to midnight. He never got into the fundraising thing. We always wondered, you know, Steve, you gotta ask him before they're gonna call you up. You know? And Steve's one of these guys. But you know, last fall, he volunteered for the programming committee. Now, programming committee is a really contentious, it's where we're doing a lot of our volunteer coordinating is happening with that. And it's an appointed committee, but it's really doing it. It's doing the keeping people in the seats where used to be a couple of other people in the station doing it. So Steve's on board. It took a long time for him, but he did it really on his own merits. I wasn't into the gong shows. I wasn't into the casino nights for fundraising. When it took me 5 or 6 years to realize that, but a chowder supper in my town lets me do Quahogs, which is what we've got in our town, or the birthday party we had for the 20th anniversary this year, we did it down at the folk coffee house in Eastham. It was easy. It's like rolling off a log because we do that every 2 weeks. So that was a neat matchup. So I found my niche. If you'd asked me to volunteer at a gong show or a casino night, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know.
And we have one major fundraiser, and I'd like to get back to having smaller ones. A lot of people said, hey, we miss the spaghetti suppers and those. We were going broke, dying, doing the spaghetti suppers.
Right.
We finally came up with a plan. We have a fest in the summer on the Cape, which everybody's so busy. How can you get that 200, like you guys, your full circle summer fair? We said, we don't have people that have that kind of time. Mm-hmm. But what happened is we found the Melody Tent in Hyannis, which does rock shows and folk shows every night of the summer. Okay, we have to pay them $10,000 to run the show. Run the mechanics of it, the security, a lot of the tickets and that stuff. But we have an event now that is really easy to get people to volunteer for because they wouldn't miss it, even though it's all the way down in Hyannis, you know. And that's worked for us, but we came up every summer, couldn't figure out how to.
Here's the good thing about having a major event, like we have a Full Circle Summer Fair, 200 volunteers. Often that's the entry point for someone for a behind-the-scenes volunteer. And at the fair, you know, we all wear a yellow shirt. It says volunteer on the back, and, you know, you're talking to people. Hey, who are you? Well, I've always wanted to do something for the station, so, you know, doing the recycling here, the next thing you know, they're coming around the station behind the scenes. And I just think so many people out there in your community who listen aren't aware that there are things for them to do if they're afraid of being or don't want to be on the radio. Maybe we have to be more vocal on the air about that and say, hey, you know, you can get involved in the station behind the scenes never have to be forced to be on the microphone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, at our station, one thing we're dealing with is a mutual apathy, I think, on both sides. And the reasons are probably great and complex on both sides. But I've been listening to volunteer and staff for a while now, and I keep hearing the same complaints about both of them. It's like a volunteer will say exactly the phrase, negative phrase about staff that I just heard coming from a staff member about volunteers. And so, you know, for whatever the reasons are is irrelevant. At this point, it's like, how can a station come to a point where everyone is willing to, you know, where staff is willing to give up some of their control over things and be willing to entrust volunteers with. I mean, I would love to see that happen. There, right now, every time they ask for someone to help out with something, nobody steps up to the plate. And volunteers, they have their exact same gripes about management, saying that nobody gives us anything to do. And so it's like, how can I break through that and break through that feeling of, you know, and get everybody to sort of give a little and say, volunteers, okay, step up. This is what you want to do. We want to have a street fair to celebrate our 20th anniversary. Let's have it volunteer run. I would love to see that, but I don't know how to make it so that staff will say okay to that and be willing to just let them run. So I don't know. If anyone has had this kind of a history in their background, where there's been a moment in their radio station history, I mean, if anyone has dealt with that.
Well, I think what it all boils down to, and I've worked with so many college stations, is goal orientation. What does the volunteer, what does that particular person want to do? Of course, I have plenty of people that want to be on the air. But that wasn't satisfying our needs all the time. We needed people to go out and, you know, and promote to the community and things like that. And that was a totally different animal. So how did I find that animal? We could recruit all the volunteers in the world, but most of them wanted a radio show. Well, where did I find this other cachet of people? And so I guess I went through an interview process of sorts, probably starting 10 years ago, where I assessed basically when that person came in the building, what do you want to do? We have certain goals with this station. Sure, we have lots of on-air slots. We have lots of, you know, and most of you want to do that, but some of them didn't. Some of them were very uncomfortable getting behind a microphone. Some of them were very uncomfortable going out and shaking hands and handing out bumper stickers or you know, a couple of the festivals that we had participating and actually being seen. You know, they wanted to do behind-the-scenes stuff. They wanted to do office work. So I think what I assessed after a while is, am I putting, you know, a square peg in a round hole? Mm-hmm. Am I, all right, yes, you're a volunteer, but I'm a volunteer who doesn't want to do that. Well, if you make them do that, then they're dissatisfied. Your performance gets hindered a bit, and there is that undercurrent that starts. Because you're right, the staff basically, you know, all right, I'm the staff and I get to do what I want to do.
Well, or it's just easier for me to do it myself, you know, if I can't get the help that I need. And I'm gonna
Well, that's where the interview process comes, you know. Can I get, who wants to assist me doing that? I mean, you know, if I interview them strong and I find out, you know, I think we all just take volunteers as volunteers most of the time. You know, it's all right, you're a volunteer, you know, I'm going to cram you. And certainly, to move up the chain and to get to the point where they want to, they're going to have to do some of the lower level work, some of the stuff that, you know, that
lower level work.
Well, not low, you know.
The lower level and the just a volunteer thing is way tricky. I mean, when people say, "Well, I'm just a volunteer,"
well, yeah. See, this is well, but that's just it. I mean, if they feel that way, you know, from the beginning, then
or we feel that way, or managers feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going on board and I'm just a volunteer, well, then something happened in the interview process where they weren't allowed to flower.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Where they weren't, you know, it's understanding their needs too. I think, you know, that volunteers can play a very key role in what you're doing, but you don't want them to feel uncomfortable from the first day, or else they're really not going to do anybody any good.
Yeah, or that they're just there to do the shit work.
Exactly.
There's no work that shit work.
Well, that's just,
you know,
it, right? I misspoke, but
work.
I meant lower level. You know,
yeah, no,
there is stuff that, you know, that when I've been at stations that I felt that I shouldn't do anymore. Well, It's the truth. Well, yeah. There's been plenty of those days. Yeah, when I had to take the plunger in there, and
that's right.
I'm not saying a volunteer should do that, but if a volunteer comes in the first day and you go, "Well, all right, here's the plunger," well, I'm not coming back.
That's right. Well, actually, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm at a college station also, and
where are you from again?
UC Santa Barbara.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And we have there's so many students want to just have access to the station, and they're getting trained to do shows before they get on FM. We have an AM carrier current kind of training facility. Our experience is we do have to kind of make a policy. We have a policy. We demand that people give something back in return for access to CD burners, this huge library.
Uh-huh.
If they're in training, it's not like they're really doing a show yet, and like all that work. I mean, they're getting things out of this.
But
and
I think you make them understand the contract. That's what the interview process. You know, all right, this is what you're going to be asked to do. Are you comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
It's
a lot of kids like will come in. You know, it's like and they have interest in music probably and for the most case, but other things too. And getting them like Kathy was saying, getting them like to work with other people instead of just coming in and doing a show and leaving. Is like, I think that's really important to kind of the sense of that the station belongs to them in a different way, and that it's not just some kind of toy.
Right.
And so it's like you have to walk that, but with like getting the long-termers, like making sure they're up on, like giving back to the station. I mean, it might factor into certain decisions, time slots occasionally, but you know we're not totally like sticklers about like at the number of hours. Like we ask for 4 a quarter every 3 months, but I mean it's like. You give some room to the grace the space.
Yeah.
What are their consequences if people don't do it?
I mean, it's like, and especially if they're like,
graduate.
If they
go on, that's
well, it's not just students. We actually have half our programmers or community members. So it's like a really interesting balancing act. But like, I mean, if they're kind of messing up in other ways, then it might they might there sometimes people have had their time slots reduced or
right. So how often does that really happen though?
Not too often.
Yeah, so it's you know, I mean you know, like that's just it, the idea of I don't know. But you know, what you're saying is so right, and a good volunteer coordinator, I mean that's exactly what their role is, and I think that's why Gene loves his job and it works, because the skill of a volunteer coordinator is to not put a round hole into a square peg. You find, you know, we've heard that before at board meetings, and it's taken me 8 years, you know, so I don't freak out at the board. You know, I just want them to do something. You know, everyone should do something. Mm-hmm. But you don't do something you're not good at.
That's
or
right.
Something
it's
that,
takes time.
You know, don't ask somebody to shake hands
well,
when they're a recluse,
me is that
you know.
It
but
sounds like you're getting a lack of support from somebody or something like
well,
that.
Well, I really would love to have a true volunteer coordinator. Somebody that's their role.
Is there someone that is constantly a burr in your side or something like
no.
that?
No.
How about a volunteer coordinator?
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
that would be
know,
very cool.
Volunteer. Does
that
anybody have
very
that
cool.
who could talk about that? Does anyone have a volunteer coordinator?
An unpaid volunteer coordinator?
We had an unpaid volunteer coordinator that coordinated the last fundraiser. Because we were between and before we had the operations manager taking on that role, that was always done by volunteers. But I want to hear, what's your name?
Sharif. Yeah, I'm going to
okay,
do some general.
Okay, because you had something you wanted
to
say.
Yeah, I've been with WEFT like for plus 2 years, and I'm not sure we ever had a volunteer coordinator before I came. But we have a station manager who is only full time. Paid, but he's overworked and underpaid,
right.
like always.
Right.
And we have a couple other like small paid stuff, but not all together. So I'm a volunteer too.
Right.
So my job is substitute coordination. And the problem I face is after they finish the training and I help them to get a slot, do some practice, and I'm the only one they keep in touch with after finishing the training. The problem I have that they don't have the email address of the station manager, they don't have email address of anyone. So they have mine because I send them email every day, what's going on, do you want to do that show? The problem is they call me like every other hour, like questions like from what song should I play next, or you know, there's a monster out my window, like, and I'm also a volunteer, plus you know, I'm still in school, I have another job, so that's the main problem I face. So one thing I would like to know, like, how would we go like having a volunteer coordinator? Do we need one? Or the way we handle things, like, we have committees, like music committees, they handle all like city shelving and like music charts and thing, programming committee, and then PR committee, and then we have like special like pledge drive and fundraise. So, but we don't have like actual volunteer committee. But the thing I do, like, sometimes like they ask me like so many questions, I kind of feel that I am doing the volunteer coordination job, because I tell them this is like, oh, okay, I've been in WEF like for half and a half year, but I haven't really done anything. What should I do? So I tell them like, oh, they need help over there.
Right.
So that's,
you're filling that role.
Right. But then also the station manager, if they can get a hold of him. So that's kind of like, sometimes I get burned out too. Like, I'm not complaining, but like, I guess.
So you're asking.
Yeah, like if it should be like the committee head, like the music committee head, he should, you know, he sends an email like every other month that we're doing this, help out. And then the programming committee, if they need help, or the peer committee. The individual committees send out emails, but there's no one to check if a person like was doing anything. Suppose we have the requirement that being on air, you have to have an ongoing volunteer.
Yeah, you have the same requirement.
Right.
That all stations
so, but
have
there's I know like tons of people that have been doing a show for 2 years, but I don't see them any other time, just doing their show. But there's, and I'm not like that comfortable telling everyone, oh, hey, you know that guy, he's not doing anything. But it's, there's like no, and we don't have a policy, the policy that you were talking about.
Yep.
We don't have anything like that. So that's
right.
Like,
so there's a few things. One is figuring out whether you need some kind of policy that
clarifies
things, but be way careful.
Yeah.
About, you know, what you write down. And the other thing is yeah, maybe, you know, maybe someone does need to be in that role, and, you know, and it depends on what your budget is, whether, you know, whether you want to volunteer. I mean, I think it's a serious job being a volunteer coordinator, and, you know, whether you can afford to pay someone or compensate them for their time in another way or whatever, but, that seems like, you know, a real necessity.
I have a possibility there, sort of a halfway. We've done it in the past. It's not in place right now. Instead of having one person, yourself, you can have genre coordinators. So you might know, we have a wide range of music, so you get your head jazz person, and your head folk person, and your head rock person, and your news and commentary people. And so you're dividing that job into however many groups your station sort of encompasses. So we had First Light and Late Night. So I was somebody that I'd get the calls from the people that are waking up at 5 and driving in to be there at 6. And I try to, those are different problems than the people that are doing late night. We both have the same problem because we don't see the staff because we're not there when the staff is there. So that's one way of doing it, just genre coordinators.
Yeah, we have that.
Okay.
We have the genre.
That's
actually, I'm also the world music genre coordinator.
Okay. But you can focus there and encourage the jazz coordinator to shepherd his flock. Then, okay, it takes communication.
Right.
And the next step I want to ask is, whether stations have mandatory staff meetings, how often, and how much of your work is one-on-one? Because you have a desk and office, they come to talk to you. Because we have a DJ summit twice a year where we at least see each other.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we don't. I don't know. I think most of the stations are sort of like
that. And is that a mandatory meeting, your DJ summit?
No, it isn't. We don't have mandatory much.
At all.
You're behind the mic when you're supposed to be.
People come?
People come. Half of the people come.
Yeah.
Half of the people don't, but that's the world.
And see, so for me, that, you know, that I spend so much energy chasing down the other half because they're never tuned in. You know, I mean, they get an email or whatever, but, you know, I mean, literally, you know, 10 years goes by and you don't see somebody.
But maybe that doesn't matter so much.
Yeah.
Doesn't
well,
matter.
Well, but if you have 200 volunteers, I mean, there's only one sheep left outside, I'll be happy with the 199.
But there's issues critical to the station that everybody should be really in tune with, you know? I mean,
See, I think if they don't want to be tuned into those issues, That's their choice.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I'm from a little station here. And
what station are you from?
WJFF.
Okay.
And we have only one paid person and sometimes another paid person. Mm-hmm. We don't have, at least I'm not aware, that there's a real careful look at how to, no one's used the word I'm most interested in, recruit volunteers.
Exactly.
Because we don't have 200, we don't have a catchment area. There's only 70,000 people who live in the county here mm-hmm. around, so it's much smaller. I'm interested in how you recruit. We started with some volunteer meetings that everybody liked to come. There was a problem, and it was this issue of how can we get people to do more outside. And it got to be, you know, a bad road. You're not going to go down that road. It is not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I don't think it's worth it. We wanted to create a more esprit de corps that people would volunteer more. And I think a good way to do it is you just look the person in the eye or you call them on the phone and say, you know, Sally, I really need you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know it's within reason, I think your chances are fairly good that they might say yes. I think we haven't had enough volunteer meetings. The manager says, well, there's really nothing to deal with. I don't think that's a good answer. I think some of those volunteer meetings and at Summit sounds like a wonderful idea to do some training and to do some, you know, fun things, I think, is very important. Once a year, when you go on air, it's set up so that your show is automatically taped onto a cassette, and the program committee listens to it. To be on a show, you have to show, you can demonstrate these skills on a whole page, you know, of stuff. But once you have a show, then every year you get evaluated. But where we fall down is that the program committee, who are volunteers, most of them should not be on a show themselves. I think that's not good to have a programmer, an on-air person, be on the program committee that does evaluation or critiquing or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
They listen to the tape and they are to give you comments back. And I know the first year I was really earnest and I wanted to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I said, well, did you listen? What do you think? Well, you know, it's okay. I said, no, I really want you to tell me. It's often very hard for the manager to say, you know, now, that was okay, but you need to improve. And it goes around that discussion of, is anything okay as far as the standard of performance for a volunteer? And I don't feel it is. I think we should be raising up the standard of our on-air people all the time. And no matter how hard it is, I think it's the job of the paid manager to sit down with me at least once a year and say, Sonia, you know, you've gotten rid of the ums and the ahs, but you really have a little bit too much dead time and you ought to pot this. And, you know, give me some real help to make
the
F word. Yeah. Make it better. Our problem here is more finding more volunteers. And I because our station has I think it's been here 12 years, but a lot of locals still think of us as, you know, this little kooky station down there.
And hippies.
Something like that. We'd like to do more to interview people that are not in our wavelength normally and do.
How often do you have training at JFF?
Irregularly, sporadically.
See, that's a key. You have it every week.
Well, and the other thing that I was going to say, you know, that's a great question about getting people in. And, you know, as a development director, that's what I believe is my role, is to not getting people to listen, getting them to be involved. So, you know, the interviewing is a great way. And Kathy told me this, programming is outreach. You know, you go up to the mayor of your town and you say, I want to interview you. Well, all of a sudden that legitimizes the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the most legitimate, straightforward Marine in the town and put him on the radio.
Right.
And it's like what Errol was saying, you know. That's what I took from what Errol was saying, is that give everybody the mic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend in Boulder, because we're this progressive, you know, town, we tend to just go to the progressives. But and that's why we're pigeonholed. And I think community radio is pigeonholed as a whole, because we're not putting the mic in front of everybody.
Everybody.
I want to suggest something. A study was done. If you want to sell the idea of either paid or a full-time volunteer coordinator to your station, that a study was done that for every hour spent supervising volunteers, you get like between 9 and 14 hours of volunteer time. Because of exactly what Jean and what you're all talking, you know, people need that connection. They need to actually sit down with someone and know who to call, and you know. So a lot of times we think, oh, we can't afford it. But if you look at what you could get, if you paid somebody for 5 hours a day. That would be an extra 100 or so hours of mm-hmm. of work. And anyway, something.
There is also the problem with people who give assignments, that they have a standard of exactly how it is to be done. And I've lived in a commune for so many years. One has to develop a standard that there is a minimum of performance required. And some people will be stellar and do it better than I could do it, and some will do it not as well as I can do it. But it's got to be okay. And the manager cannot go and really interrupt. When she sees or he sees something isn't going the way she would do it, she just can't. She's got to step back, really. And that's often very hard. Or the volunteer has to say, you know, it'll be okay this way. It isn't going to be exactly the way you would do it, but it really is quite okay.
Trust. Yes.
Yeah, I'm with WBIX. We don't have any kind of volunteer coordinator. One of the things I'm up against now is I'm helping to organize a volunteer group that's going to be working with the website and making the website more integrated with the webcast. But I wanted to say a couple of things from the perspective of somebody who is a volunteer in every city I've lived in. I've just gone to the community radio station and volunteered my services. And also as one of those people who really likes the unglamorous jobs and actually gravitates towards them. Mm-hmm. And I guess some of the things, and also by the way, I'm coming to Boulder
oh, good, thank
in
you.
November, so I'm looking for somebody. So I was looking for somebody from KGMU, so I'm
what's your name?
Catherine. I just wanted to say that the thing that has been going through my mind is that whenever I step into a community radio station, wherever I've moved to, wherever I've lived, I'm always struck by what a frightening, intimidating experience it is, mm-hmm. especially if you're mm-hmm. someone who doesn't feel really comfortable doing things like public speaking, community outreach, would be horrified to be on the air. Often seems from the outside, stepping in as a new volunteer, that there is a core group that's almost a clique and that you will never mm-hmm. penetrate it. And it feels so frustrating because you feel that you are so committed to the ideals of community radio and you have so much to give and so much you want to give. But I think in terms of specifics, that's one of the reasons why I gravitate to the nuts and bolts unglamorous things. So there are kind of two situations specifically that I've found that are very difficult walking in. And the first one is the one I call the what do you want to do conundrum, which is the worst thing, I think, in my experience, someone like me anyway, to be told when you ask, well, I want to help, what can I do? And I'm asked, well, what do you want to do? And that can be a very intimidating and general question, and you don't know how to answer it, and you don't know what there is to be done, so it becomes vague, and it's hard to make a commitment. And it's hard to know, and then people think perhaps that you're not committed, that you see the station as a toy or something that is not something that you want to be central in your life. And I think the best situations I've been in with that question is the one time that I got somebody asking me, what do you want to do? And the question I asked them was, what are you good at? What do you enjoy doing? I said, we have a function coming up on the 15th of the month, and these are five things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. Do you have any skills? Can you update a web page? Can you send out emails? Can you arrive an hour beforehand and set up tables? Can you bring refreshments? Do you have a car, for example? Mm-hmm. Things like that. That is something that I think helped get people out for that particular event, and it became a success. The other thing, I had to write down my little numbers here, is a situation that, and I understand where it comes from, but when you have a station that for obvious reasons, for funding and so on, is in such chaos that it doesn't matter what you say you're good at, or even if you know what you want to do and can communicate that fact, where you're told what you have to do or the situation will fall apart. That you're told that, I walked into where I lived in Ottawa and I was told, look, you're coming in the door and we desperately need somebody on the morning show. So I went on the morning show. And it actually worked out okay in some regards, but I almost developed an ulcer because the stress of preparing a show, and I have a problem with doing things like phone interviews. Interviewing is my room 101. And so I just had to leave the situation. I just couldn't handle the stress. of having to deal with that once a week. It became my nightmare. I started having nightmares about going into the station. Because, and it could be anything. It could be as in, okay, you have to record this event because there's nobody to record it. It has to be recorded. And if that frightens you, then you want to help, and you don't want either the station or the event to fall apart, but it kind of drives you away. And I guess the only other thing that I would say is the last point is that I guess it really speaks to something other people have said, that even if you don't do the glamorous jobs, the small things, the setting up the table, driving the cars, photocopying the paper, you really want to feel like you're part of the community, like what you do makes a difference, and that somebody out there notices you. And even if you know your job doesn't seem as important as others, that it is important, and that you can penetrate that inner circle, and you know people will say hi to you and know you and call on you. So that's what I want to say.
Thank you.
That was pretty important.
We've got 10 minutes left, so if there's any points that we haven't covered that people really want addressed, we should do that.
One thing I want to bring to your situation is I know that WMNF is probably the most important thing in my life next to my family. Mm-hmm. And I love the station. And the idea as when I was a volunteer, my most important thing as a volunteer is to make that station viable, strong, and I think that's something that has to be instilled in volunteers, that it is important and what you do is important. And to overcome those things, management aside, I mean, you, as a volunteer, you have to make that station work. I mean, you have to be insistent. If your management says no, says yes, we will. We are volunteers. This is our station. We're in this community. It's our community station. And you need to work with us to make that thing work. And that's what is important. If your volunteers love that station, it is imperative that they do the right thing and make that station work. Because they have an obligation to the listeners who support the station to make it work. And they need to reinforce that to the management. That is so important. Recruiting volunteers, the way I find out is you go to them. Don't let them come to you.
It's too passive.
Yeah. We hold monthly meetings and have a good turnout to that, but we have a large area. We have three or four counties we have to go to. I will take, especially in some of the outlying areas, I will go out there and have a volunteer meeting. I've done it a couple of times. We're continuing to do that. When we have events, and any time we have a presence at at somebody else's event, we always pitch volunteering to other people who come up. Come and volunteer. Be a part of what we are. Go to them.
I have a question, Gene, and that is, we're in a small community, and we have a very, small volunteer base. There's a lot of people who volunteer at several different nonprofits, and a very high level of nonprofits in our town.
Yes.
So for the volunteer who's not going to make KMUD their main thing outside their family, you know, we've got to make room for that.
Oh, yeah.
And acknowledge that.
We do, and the way I put it when I talk to a new volunteer, I says if they say, in your situation where you get that question, I don't ask that question. They say, all they say is, I want to help. I says, good.
Yeah.
I have stuff for you to do. And sometimes it's not glamorous. Sometimes it is glamorous. Sometimes we let them find their niche. I say, find your niche. If it's working in the CD library, stacking CDs, working in the music department, working in news, working behind the scenes, stuffing envelopes, taking tickets at an event, answering the phone when the receptionist is out, look up during pledge drive to make sure we get everything right, answering phones during pledge drive, whatever you want to do, that's fine. All we're asking is you make a commitment to as a volunteer to provide some time. You make the commitment. We are flexible. You come in, and this one woman came up to me last week and says, you got to tell me what to do. Says, I can't do that. Says, you come in, if you come in the door and you want to do something, I'll have something for you to do.
I'd like to go back to the question of whether being on the air is, you know, glorious enough to
pay for it as volunteer.
Right. If being on, you know, you talked about, you know, giving somebody the mic and, you know, the more glamorous jobs, and, you know, that means being on air. You know, that's the glamorous job. And I'm just curious about that. I mean, you know, I've had an on-air position and still, you know, just felt as though, you know, I was also required to volunteer on top of that.
And I'd like to just get some more opinions because, you know, I mean, do most of you have enough volunteers that you can, you know, like at KGNU, just, you know, say, you know, somebody will do it, you know, and I guess. You know.
I'm not Jewish, but I'm a good Jewish mother. I'm pretty good at getting some of the on-air people to make a commitment to do other things, usually by making them feel guilty.
When your job review comes around, Jean, you know, I had a job review, that was a really strong point, which really brought it home to me.
Yeah.
That, you know, that Joanne says that if you don't do this, that KGNU will explode tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it's so critical, and I'm thinking I'm being earnest, you know, and you know, we need your help, you know.
Yeah.
You need to be the backbone of this radio station.
Yeah.
Off air.
And
yeah.
What are they
but
saying?
I overdid.
What
is the reason, you know,
they
why
too
can't
hard at preparing the show is
what,
kind of the
but, and does that seem valid? I mean,
you know, it depends on the programmer.
Right.
Some programs we do. Okay, I do two Kuntizer program. I do jazz program. I can go in there and just do it. I don't have to. I just have to spend 20 minutes pulling CDs.
Right.
I know the music. Right. No big deal. I do, public affairs program. I can spend, you know, 5 or 6 days easily preparing for, you know, a one-hour show or more,
yeah.
You know, sometimes. So it totally depends on what's happening. But to me, it comes down to whether you really understand and want and feel that thing about wanting to do more for the station. I don't think you can force people that don't get that.
No, you can't force them, but, is the policy enforceable, and are there enough volunteers, usually?
There's no lower-level jobs, then there aren't higher-level jobs. And so why is that a privilege? If that's just helping people define their niche of volunteering, why is it the niche of having a program the same equated with shredding paper? I don't understand the division of labor.
In your response,
right,
we have a lot of
valid volunteer.
It's a scarce
offering.
Resource. Airtime.
Yeah.
I don't think you should say glamorous about money.
Yeah.
I think the word is privilege. I think it's really a privilege to be on air, and it's a great responsibility. If you mess up on air, it's really a big mess up.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not so good.
Right.
Yeah, but generally you're reaping a lot of glory.
Yeah,
you know,
one thing that we
well,
need to talk
well,
about
well,
here
maybe
is
in bigger
egos
communities.
In radio. And those of you that are radio steeped, you know, perhaps you haven't stepped back enough to see the world outside of the radio, but I came as a veterinary technician and worked for 10 years before ever being on the air. And I'm astounded by the ego that it takes to do radio.
Uh-huh.
And I say that with love in my heart. Mm-hmm. But so that's the thing. That when you work, and this, you know, somebody said, well, I worked 30 hours on that piece, but the stroke that is gotten from the 5 minutes of work is all payment. You see, so that's why the being on the air, and these people, you know, if it was difficult to prepare the show for the last 15 years, and this was tedious and you know, it was a hardship on you. You wouldn't keep doing it for these 15 years.
But it's not a hardship. It's just another aspect of volunteering.
Yeah.
Every week after I do my show, I go into the kitchen and I wash all the dishes because for some weird reason, Wednesday afternoon, the sink is full. I sweep the floor. And I look around at volunteers that we have and I think of how many of them ended up volunteering because they came in to drop off something and somebody was really nice and said, hey, you know, you want to stick around. It's a karma thing, really. And I think we can't forget to use our airwaves to keep reminding the people who are listening, someone's out there sitting in their kitchen, hey, you know, we keep needing people so that it doesn't have this cliquish feeling and that you impart, you try to have a culture where the newest volunteer is just as valuable and just as much a part as the person who's been there for 20 years. And how do you do that? I think you need to consciously do it.
Speaking of using the airwaves, when K-Mud was doing its remodel, we're moving into a new building, what was this, in 1997, we didn't have anyone to coordinate the job. I mean, we needed a contractor, a carpenter, whatever, to oversee all the volunteers. We put it out on the radio. And the one person that was perfect for the job materialized, worked for 4 months on the job for a stipend of $5,000. So, you know, the airways are incredibly important. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
The thing is, I'm going to say, in your situation, we talk about on-air people volunteering other than their own air site. I mean, we have, it's the same thing with us. We don't make it mandatory. Like I said, the guilt thing is really good sometimes because most people understand it. And in a situation... In a situation where we have this one particular situation, I'll bring an example. We have a show on Friday nights called what is it called now? It's blues. It's a blues show. Blues with a Groove is what it's called. The guy is white male. He's a very white male. His name is Soul Man, and some people think he is black. So, but he's really, he does a great show. He does AM show on a regular commercial station. But we have problems with him continually about volunteering. He just comes in, does his show, and he was off the air for a couple of weeks, and we put in our best afternoon DJ who does an incredible R&B show. Wednesday afternoon, if you ever listen on the web, listen to it. It's absolutely fabulous. And we put him in there, and Soul Man heard him and was astonished because he never listens during the day. He says, this kid's good. I need to listen to him. Uh-huh. And he came in during a marathon and actually sat down and answered phones for us during that marathon.
Well, he got a little threatened about losing.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And one of the things I talk to people about is says, I always go to outreach or I go to an event, and somebody come up, where's this person? Like, I'm here. Everybody wants to know where Randy Zimmerman's at, you know. But where's this person at? You know, what's this guy really like? And when I go back and I'll tell, hey, whoever, whatever, hey, I was at this event the other day and these people were looking for you. Where were you?
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
That really makes, that's the ego. Yeah. Ego driven.
The star,
you volunteer, your public is clamoring for you.
Yes, and it's true. And we do have, that's what, you know, you say, you go out to an event and 25, 30 people come up to you. I had this little girl. It was really funny. We did a outreach event at a minor league baseball game one time, and she loves the station. And we had these license tags, and she wanted to get all the DJs to sign her license tag. Mm. And she was really thrilled. When we have our music director's name is Flea, and she loves Flea's show. Says, thank you, Mr. Flea. It's just as cute. It's this wonderful thing. But that's one way you can stroke their ego. It says, hey, says all these people are asking, and they do. It says, what's he really like, you know?
We have a guy, like, 80-year-old. We call him old-timer.
Yeah.
So we same problem like this old man. Like, he has a taxi service, old-timer taxi. He drives it, and he will talk about it on air. Like, oh, if you need a ride, give me a call. So we can't really, because he has, like, so he gets, like, calls and call, like, all the, it's a country show.
Yeah.
So all the local people around here, like, loves him. Like, he's, like, the greatest DJ on earth. So we can't really, and he threatens, like, during the pledge drive, if you don't pledge, they're going to take me off the air.
Yeah.
So is it mostly unworkable?
Yeah.
You know, is that
what
I'm
we're
getting?
Telling
you know?
It's not, it's not, you know, be flexible.
Flexibility is a big part of it, I think.
I don't think it's been so hard to get people on air to, you know, say you've got to, you know, do it. Even if you spend a lot of time, it's just good karma, you know what I mean? Yeah. You just to, you know, let everyone know you're there. You know?
I think if you had a really great volunteer coordinator in place from the get-go and was flexible in that, you know, you don't have to do this, but you do, I still believe this, and I'll hold on to it, you do have to do something, and here's 100 things for you to do. You pick one, and in a year's time, we got to check it off, or you got to have a meeting with the station.
Right, yeah, just any little effort.
And
know,
something.
Just to show that you
know. As a volunteer, there's a huge difference between me being told anything. What to do.
Yeah.
Or being asked.
Ask is the important thing.
You know, instead of saying, I need you to do this, it's like, can you help us do this?
Yeah.
And eventually, it's going to build.
Although, it doesn't seem like that, you know, that sounds good, but if everyone's saying it's not, you know, I assume people, you know, are asking. You know, I can't imagine you're all tyrants.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they are, but Patty, you haven't said anything.
I just wanted to say, you know, I mean, that's kind of how the takedown of Pacifica happened, was we really were not including people in a way. You know, it was like really... like a WBAI anyway, there's a real, they're not very open. And even since it's been brought back, they're not open there. And there's, you know, of course they begging you to come and answer the phones at the pledge drive, but the rest of the time very closed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's, you know, if and there are programmers that only come to do their shows. And, you know, I know that they don't do much preparation before they get there either. I think in order to maintain a community radio station essence, I mean, there has to be some way, at least if they're not going to do the volunteer, to all come together some point, mm-hmm. to like take responsibility for the governance, for the maintaining of the structure. Because the thing is, like, what happened, nobody even knew what was happening, because it worked for the inner circle of people to not tell anybody. Mm-hmm. So by having in place a structure, whether it be meetings where programmers, I mean, you know, I guess I'm listening to, you know, I agree with you, you know? I think that people, you know, I wish they would come to meetings, and or programmers should come to some kind of programming something or do something besides, because otherwise it gets very elitist. Mm-hmm. That is very, I think, in a way damaging, because we're supposed to be serving the community, not...
And the other volunteers might say, what are they doing?
Yeah. Right, responsibility.
And I think that we have to accept that, and I think that that part of the culture of a station has to include that you do have a responsibility to work with systems that are in place, so that when there's a system that isn't working, at least you have a more positive angle to try and change it. I don't know. It's just because I'm seeing, you know, it just at our station, there's a lack of a lot of things. I mean, it's a great station, don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to...
What station are you at?
KFCI in Tucson. And there's some beautiful things that happen there. But there is kind of a breakdown in morale and culture right now, mm-hmm. as far as communication. Mm-hmm. And that's our main thing that we're addressing. But
that'd be a really cool topic for this thing, you know, how to create the most positive culture. For me, because there's so many new stations going on. And, you know, to start from the get-go.
Right.
I mean, we talk about it through all this management discussion and stuff like that, but, it's this thing that we just throw out, the culture of the station. Like, I stepped into KGNU, it's this great, positive culture of the station. So I'm lucky, you know, I can't... meeting people at stations that aren't as you know, for whatever reason... You know, how do you pull it out?
How you pull it out is probably what's... Because you kind of have to let go of the negative if you're going to move past it. But, you know, I mean, on the side of the... as far as, like, a negative aspect of the volunteers is, you know, sometimes I'll see staff do something for them, and they'll, you know, and the response will be, you know, we've been asking you to thank us, and then they will do it, and then... They will say, well, you never thank us. And
you didn't thank us good enough. That's a shitty party.
You thank us too little, too late.
Part of that is just representative of other issues, of course. It's not just that. But, you know, there does come a responsibility as a volunteer that, you know, you're doing it to help the station, mm-hmm. and you have to let go of, like, a constant stroke and reinforcement. Because you are part of the greater good, and mm-hmm. some, you know, you're working with few staff people who are overworked and underpaid as it is, and you know, I mean, their responsibility, of course, is to make you a part of it, and that's been a lacking at our station too. But I don't know, I just don't know how to break through this culture.
Another part of that culture should be volunteers thanking each other. I mean, we have that at WERU, a feeling where, you know, I know that Friday night music guy came in and fixed a broken pump and is doing all this carpentry stuff. So other volunteers say, hey, Mike, you're so great. Thanks so much for doing that for all of us. Or maybe because I was on staff, I know how overworked they are. So also after I do the dishes and sweep the floor, I go to the office manager. I say, hey, Joan, you want me to bring the mail for you? Oh, would you? You know, little things like that. But other volunteers, you know, pick up on that, and you see other people doing that. But there is once in a while a feeling of, because we had a major theft of all our Mobile Fidelity CDs. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible story because I met the man who had the company. He brought us, you know, anyway, they all disappeared one night. So now we have this system where anybody who drops into the station has to sign in and sign out. And it's a sort of a feeling like sometimes, I mean, I'm driving by, so I'll go in to see if there's something I could do. But sometimes people go, what are you doing here? It's Monday. Or, you know, and that's feeling lately there that other people have mentioned to me. You don't want to have somebody say that to you, but Kathy, what are you doing here? Well, I thought I'd drop in to see if there was something I could do. That's a new And anyway, that's something to just take a look at, because do you ever have that station where you'll just go in to see what I do and somebody says, what are you doing here? And then you go, well, nothing, I'm going home.
I'm always glad you come in, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to be careful, really creep in,
yeah.
And it could change the culture.
One of the things I try to do is let our listeners know what our volunteers are doing. I go on the air maybe and say thank you this week to whoever. Now, my development director has a teenage son, and he came in, and he's in Florida to apply for a state scholarship. You have to get somebody community service hours. So he got most of his this summer, but he did an absolute fabulous job. We have these old tapes, public affairs tapes, music tapes, reel-to-reels that we've been trying to get categorized forever. So he says, can I do that? I says, sure, Curtis, go ahead. He did it. And he went back to school on Wednesday, and I made sure that I went back in the studio. I says, hey, I'd like to thank these people. And I'd really like to thank Curtis for the wonderful job he's done over the summer. He's helped us out every day. And that's one way you thank people. I make it a habit of trying to go in the studio and talk at least once or twice a week about volunteer things. What's going on? Thank the DJ for doing it. Or I go in, if the DJ played a particular song that I really liked, I go in and say, thank you. Because, I'm a big music freak, and I go in there all the time. Somebody plays something that's really great. Somebody played Sons of the Pioneers the other day on the morning show. And I grew up in Nashville, and I love country music. I love Roy Rogers. It gets played in my house all the time. My wife loves Roy Rogers, Don Walser, Bob Wills. So, but somebody played Son of the Pioneers, and I went and said, Sherry, thank you. That was just a wonderful set.
Yeah.
And that's all the thing. I'll go in and talk to the DJ every once in a while, walk around, and if somebody comes in, I'll mention ideas and things that we want to try to do. Say, this is coming up, You want to help us out with it? Huh? Yeah.
So, the next workshop starts in 20 minutes. This is the break time. Keep going as long as people want up until the next workshop starts or whatever.
I have a question or a point. I want to talk to Sonia, especially because JFF is here. And I know all of our cultures are different in the way we do it. What's so fascinating about the conferences is that we find out what works, what hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. And I can't claim we have a peer review process that works. But we've been at it 20 years, and I'm very curious because our programming committee decides what spoken word programs are going to go on the air, who, they take the proposals for new programs. We've decided that when we first started, we said, well, we've got to have people from the community, got to have some staff people, got to have DJs. After trying that for a while, we went to all DJs. They're all programmers. You're saying you'd rather avoid that because it doesn't, but I started this calling it peer review, because our feeling is that people that are just from the community really don't understand what's going on technically in the studio, how to do those shows. Mm-hmm. What goes over? We've got a community advisory board, and people can advisory what they want to hear in general. But the actual peer review, it's kind of important that I know somebody knows what's involved there. Now, I guess I'm saying this because I would like, if there's a subcommittee or another conference topic that brings up that peer review process and how to set it up.
But you say your committee is DJs. What do they do to evaluate the quality of a broadcast?
Program committee. I'm programming committee right now has a big job in keeping people, filling slots by people. But they have taken on and are setting up a peer review process. And I, as a long-term volunteer, would rather that be a programming volunteer that's doing that rather than an independent person that really doesn't have experience doing programming. But two different cultures.
But I think the interesting
methods.
Thing would be to listen to tapes and then have some sort of check off and then give some feedback. The hard part, I think, we found is actually sitting down and giving the feedback to the person.
I think it's very good to mix it up. I think having a listener or two on this committee. Yeah. Because listeners listen. People that's all they do. They would bring something else into
That's one of the things we do at M&F is that our program committee is similar to yours. Mm-hmm. It's a peer review, similar. Program director's in charge of it. But it's a requirement that all the volunteer board reps, if they're either on air or off air, are required to go to that. They're part of that programming committee because mm-hmm. they are listeners. Mm-hmm. We have one board rep and one volunteer committee member that are not on air programmers.
They're part of the
part of the programming committee.
So we need to introduce.
I think what would be good too is if they could, you know, respect each other, that you have the DJs as well as the listeners on the committee together, so that you get both angles. Because you're right. I mean, a listener listens just as a listener, and that's what it's all about. What goes out over the mic, but. You know, I see your point, too, that somebody needs to understand. So if the two factions would work together closely on a committee, that would be the ideal peer review.
As it's turned out, it hasn't been as much factions as the people who have volunteered and realized how important the programming committee have been volunteers. But our board has been has been programmers up until recently, because they're the ones that have had the biggest stake in it.
Sure.
And it broadens the longer you're at it.
But in the case of that, I think one thing we try to encourage people to do, not only volunteers, but the community, is to come to meetings and find out what we do. Invite them in. Share with them. Because we get some good feedback. We started doing a News and Public Affairs Committee meetings after 9/11. They were talking about our coverage. And our first turnout, we had about 150, 200 people, which is pretty good size. And we do it about once a quarter or so, and we get their feedback on what we're doing and see what happens. And we take those. Sometimes we'll do sound, and we'll have a call-in show after we do a committee meeting to get their feedback, people we couldn't attend. It's good to get people to call in and say, you know, and invite them in to get everybody's opinion.
How many volunteers do you have, Gene?
250, regular.
Excuse me.
Not include eggs, including on air.
And how many volunteer programmers?
Everybody's a volunteer programmer. All the programmers are volunteers.
And how many programmers do you have?
God, I can't count.
As many as there are hours in the day.
Yes. And then of course the staff. Some of the staff have their shows, but they do it on a volunteer basis.
Sure. Yeah.
Can you explain real quick? I'm sorry, I forgot your name. You mentioned that your volunteer coordinator, you paid them, and then it was just volunteer, and then they quit or were fired. And can you just go into a little...
To me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wait, I'm
this is Brian. Brian. What's your name?
Eddie.
Okay. Eddie Scott.
You want to know just...
your experience.
You mentioned something early on about...
Paid volunteers.
About what happened with your volunteer coordinator recently. And
I'll backtrack a bit, and I'll say when I came to WRFG in 1983, we had someone who was so involved in the station that she functioned as a volunteer coordinator. And I thought she was very good. She just loved the station so much, and she saw to it that various slots got filled and the jobs got done. I don't remember why she no longer did it. She eventually became station manager and got fired by the board. Again, I voted against firing her. I have to talk for a while to answer it. It's kind of problematic. We went to a new structure at WRFG. We'd had several station managers. A lot of us felt having a single station manager doesn't work because there's no one person who's good at all those jobs, and then the station manager starts structuring the station to preserve their job. So we went to something I'd gone to observe work of the ORT in 2000 and said, let's try a collective structure. So we put one in place, and one of those jobs was volunteer coordinator. And then I was on the committee that interviewed the candidates for volunteer coordinator. And we decided to hire someone, and I was very strong for this person, who understood progressive politics, and we felt that we needed to go more in that direction, that the station, WRFG is too much oriented towards music, and especially now to people who want to make it in music careers, in radio careers, and being DJs. But it turned out she just didn't have the ability to make volunteers feel comfortable and to pull them into the station. You know, part of her job was to go out to different segments of the community, even her own community, which is gay, lesbian, persons of color. She wasn't doing outreach even in her own community and bringing them into the station. And a lot of people on the station felt she was alienating volunteers. If you're asking why she was fired, that was why she was fired. As I said, I voted against firing her, but I think I was the only one who voted against firing her. And now the question is arising, do we really need a paid volunteer coordinator? I would say, listening to what Jean does, I'd say, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's finding the right person for the right job.
Yeah, getting the right person.
I think that's what's critical when you're starting.
And
I
have
all
these
things that we've been saying, that's what you want in a volunteer coordinator. It's the exact opposite of what you just said. Somebody who will go into the community.
Yeah.
Somebody who will put a round peg into a round hole. You know, those are the key qualities.
But it takes someone who's got extraordinary skills, both the interpersonal skills, but also, at least from our point of view, we want someone who really understands the mission of the station.
I think it takes passion.
You have to have the passion, but it takes intelligence. It takes coordinating.
More than one person, like one paid, and then helping. That's another option.
Yeah.
Well, and again, organization within your job, like, you know, I really do believe. You know, we hear this all the time. People come to an orientation at KGNU. There's 20 people that come. But even after 20 years, we're still not clear as to, okay, now, like what this gal was saying, you know, what can I do? Well, here's a list of 100 things. And my thing would be, here's a list of 100. Take a look, see which one works the best for you, and then we'll get started. But we're still not making that transition, you see, of, you know, you get a good group of getting everybody plugged in, and that's where an excellent volunteer coordinator would make the difference. All those other things, community outreach, you're getting people from within the community soliciting and all that. But once they come, they don't know. They've never done radio, for goodness sakes, before. How do they know what they're going to be good at or what they're going to do? But you got to find something, you know, like if somebody said, well, and this is the thing we always need done, alphabetizing in the library. Well, I don't want to sit around and alphabetize a bunch of goddamn CDs. That's terrible. But I would do it. You know what I'm saying? So the right thing.
But your job is so full. I mean, being the development director for a station the size of KGNU, that's like, it's hard for you to be also trying to be a volunteer coordinator. You should have a volunteer coordinator who come to you and say, "What do you need, Joanne?"
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you need it.
I mean, that's just.
And you know what? We need to end this because the next workshops have to begin. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Man, it's such a good joke. Do you want to go see the car?